I remember actually the first time I saw a Cashpoint card was actually my brother's Cashpoint card. This is really sad, chaps, and a deviation from what we're supposed to be talking about. But it was a card with perforated holes in it that you put in the hole in the wall machine, and it gave you £10, and it kept the card and returned it to you in the post 3 or 4 days later so you could use it again.
Good God, is that real? It was, tell me.
Yeah, absolutely. 1975 or 6, maybe.
Was Fred Flintstone your next door neighbour?
Ladies and gentlemen, the next event on the card is a heavyweight marketing bout for the small to medium business owner. In the red corner from Paradise, Australia, is David. And in the blue corner from an English paradise is David.
Hello, and welcome to David versus David, the podcast for the small and medium business owner to help you with your queries, provide answers to those niggling advertising, marketing, internet marketing-based questions, problems that you're facing, things that you want to try and overcome, things that you just don't quite know where to turn to. We've seen it before. We know lots of people with the same queries, and we're here to help you. So from me in the UK, David Pritchard, it's hello. And to my co-host down on the other side of the world in sunny Tasmania still, it's David Council. Hi, David.
Hi, gang. How is it going? We're here at the upside down end of the world where everything is really rosy today. It sounded a bit stilted, didn't it? Sounded like my year two teacher. Hello, boys and girls, and welcome along. You're going to learn times tables today. Woo-hoo.
Oh, good fun, eh? Good fun. As always, David, a lively introduction, no matter even it does sound a bit stilted, but that's just the time of day. You've had a hard day, I guess.
I've had a really busy day, and it was hot here today. So if you're familiar with Australian weather, when it's hot, it's hot. And if you're in Hobart, and it's hot, it's really hot. Because a warm day in Hobart, nice day in Hobart, and I realise we talk about weather every week, but a nice day in Hobart's 25. That's a beautiful day. Well, today was 32, so it was hot. I'm going to go and have a swim after we finish this, before we think about cooking some dinner.
I'd also like to say here in the UK, it is 32 degrees as well.
Yeah, that would be Fahrenheit.
Absolutely, that's Fahrenheit, which is converting is about zero. No, it's just edged above zero this morning. We have a nice frosty start to the sun is coming up. It's a beautiful day is dawning. At the time of recording here, we're talking early March, and so we're just heading into our spring. And after a miserable winter, it has been a glorious start to March. My favourite month of the year, mainly because it's my birthday tomorrow. But anyway, there we go. David's right. We do always talk about the weather. We always talk about the weather, we talk about cricket, we talk about rugby and other things like that. But we also do talk about serious stuff, which is the point of the podcast after all, because otherwise we'd be on the Weather Channel.
Hey, I had a friend who presented on the Weather Channel.
Oh, yeah.
We worked at the same radio station for years and years and years. And the last time I saw him, he'd moved on to do television. He, at one point, hosted Sale of the Century in this country. So, you know, he was a big star. But Weather Channel, yes. That's a bit sad, really.
Maybe we also have a duplicate entry category in iTunes Store. So give us all the 5-star ratings for the weather updates. Right then. So, no, seriously, though, we do need to talk business because that's what people are tuning in for. And what are we going to talk about this week, David?
Well, let's talk about looking for customers in all of the wrong places. I mean, seriously, people do the same thing over and over again because it's easy, because it's comfortable.
That's what they know, isn't it?
Yeah, it's tough to pull yourself outside of your comfort zone. And, you know, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and hoping for a different result. And with the rate that everything is changing in the world, it is just the craziest thing to keep taking your money and reinvesting it into something that isn't necessarily going to do anywhere as near as well as it did the year before. Because in that very short 12 months that slipped by, the world keeps changing at a frighteningly fast rate. You know, we're only 6 years in since the invention of the iPhone.
Yeah, I know, that's frightening, isn't it? I remember the first time I saw an iPhone, I think 2008, early 2008. it was wow, that's really cool. It was also at the time super expensive compared to everything else, and I thought, why on earth would you pay two or three times more for a phone and a contract? But you know, gee, they're just so ubiquitous now, aren't they? They're absolutely everywhere. It's rather hard to imagine 2007 when I think they came out in 2007, did they?
Yeah, I think depending on where you were in the world, somewhere between 2007 and 2008.
Remember those days before the iPhone?
Seriously. It's like saying, you know, what did we do before there was hole-in-the-wall banking? You know, before you can walk up to a terminal, you know, on the wall and take cash out. I worked in the bank around that time when I was going to university, and it was 3 o'clock closing, you know? Yeah. So if you did, you used to have people banging on the door at 3 o'clock, let me in, I've got it. It's like, sorry, pal, it's 3 o'clock. Care factor, zero.
I remember actually the first time I saw a Cashpoint card was actually my brother's Cashpoint card. And this is really sad, chaps, and a deviation from what we're supposed to be talking about. But it was a card with perforated holes in it that you put in the hole-in-the-wall machine, and it gave you £10, and it kept the card and returned it to you in the post 3 or 4 days later so you could use it again.
Good God. Is that real? It was. Tell me.
Yeah, absolutely. 1975. Five or six, maybe.
Was Fred Flintstone your next door neighbour?
Yeah, it was actually a piece of stone, not plastic, as well. Yeah, that was chiselled and had hieroglyphics on it. But no, that was genuine. And you had to wait for it to come back in the post before you could use it again. So you know, technology, everything moves. I mean, getting back on track here, you know, there's always new ways to do things. There's always new ways to find customers. There's always new ways to push your business forward. As David said, that, you know, looking for customers in all the wrong places is a case of getting out of the comfort zone, adding to what has worked for you all the time in the past, because what works for you all the time in the past, it will probably continue to work, but it won't necessarily expand you and expand your business into new and more profitable areas. Maybe it won't add to the mix, and it leaves you vulnerable to what has worked for you in the past dwindling as it becomes perhaps no longer quite so effective as markets change, as people change. And just going back to the iPhone analogy or the iPhone topic that David started, I don't think it's any secret that people like Nokia and Sony Ericsson and so on, companies who had massive market penetration with their phones and designs and stuff, started to lose it because they were ignoring customer segments who wanted new stuff, who wanted different stuff, and they weren't looking for their customers. They weren't looking for their next generation of customers. They were relying on what had worked in the past, and it wasn't going to carry on working in the past. And people like Apple, you know, they led the way. Who would have thought, a store where you have everything on display and you let everybody from 2 years old upwards come on in, play with your stuff, and walk out the store again without buying anything? Well, you know, they were looking for customers in all the wrong places, with kids that didn't buy anything, that didn't spend any money. Nah, of course not. What do kids want for Christmas? They want that glitzy bit of techno they saw in the Apple store. What do they want for their birthday? They want what their mates have started to get, etc., etc. You know, they just got it spot on all the way through, finding customers in all the wrong places that seeded their market.
You make a really good point. I think not enough businesses ask themselves, has our customer profile changed? You know, because they're assuming that it's the same group of people that are going to continue to walk through their door or, you know, go to their website day after day, and they never check. It's a bit like a cancer that slowly eats away at your business. You don't really notice it happening until it's too late. You know, all of a sudden you go, wow, our average sale has started to drop away, and we didn't do as many transactions this year as we did for the last, you know, 3 or 4 years. And if your best year was 5 years ago, then, you know, this is all the symptoms of this erosion that's taking place. And you've really got to say, well, maybe the people that I think I'm talking to aren't actually the people I should be talking to. You know, you've always got to be looking for ways to top up your customer group and keep moving with the times. Otherwise, you end up, you know, talking to the same group of people who get older and older, already own your product and don't necessarily need to buy it as frequently. You know, it doesn't break down, or, you know, they don't need the extras that come with it because their lifestyle has changed as well. If you're 75 years of age, what's the chance that you're going to go out and build yourself a brand new house? It's pretty small, really.
Yes, it's limited. Yeah. There's three ways to generate more revenue for your business. One is to up the cost of a purchase that anybody makes from your business. So, you know, make your products more expensive, make your services more expensive. So you're getting more cost per transaction. The other way is to have more transactions per customer. So the customers you do get, you sell them once, you sell them twice, you sell them three times. But the other way is to get more customers. The first two ways, you're relying on your customer base there, which if that doesn't increase itself, there's only so much you can really milk your customers. It's not a nice phrase. There's only so many ways you can really keep obtaining revenue from the same set of customers, perhaps, without over time it dwindling. So you've got to look for new customers. Look for more customers and look for them in different places, which is really what we're saying here from the outset, isn't it, David? Mm. Where else can you go looking for customers?
Yeah, so let's use an example. If your business relied on phone directories for a long time as a source of, you know, delivering customers to your business, then there's a really good chance that that's not working as well as it should be. You know, it's diminished over time. So where have they gone? Well, the younger group of them, in fact, really, all but the very, very old are looking on the internet, mm-hmm. you know, and they're looking on the internet in different places. So don't just think, oh, if I had a website, then I would see that off. They're looking at gathering their news from the internet. They're looking at gathering entertainment from the internet. They're looking at video on the internet. And all of these are opportunities for you to put your message there to go and find them. You know, don't just think, oh, I've got a website, that's fantastic, it's all I need. It's where else are they going to be? Where are your customers? Because I can tell you, they're not all sitting around a computer at home going, oh, he's got a very nice website. I think I'll come back here again tomorrow and look at that. You know, they're off looking at, you know, Netflix and YouTube, and they're looking at gossip sites and news sites and, yep. you know, pictures of cats. Well, how do I get in front of those people? And it's the same in the real world. If you're trying to chase affluent buyers, so people with money, then the best place to find them is through their kids. Where are their kids? Do they belong to sporting groups? Are they involved in, I don't know, rowing, for example? I only use that because I had that example with a client today. He was looking to sell caravans. Mm-hmm. And we know that these people who go along to these big rowing meets in Tasmania, a large proportion of them either camp or take a caravan. So they're a terrific cluster of people. They've got money. They've got a lifestyle that is conducive to having a caravan. So it's a great way to go and find them. So what do? You support the local rowing teams or the local rowing association and get advertising exclusively placed in amongst all of their venues, all of their communication. There's any number of things that you can do to get your message in front of them. And you can also work with a group like the local rowing association because they also want the money. And they will work with you to get you in front of it. So by putting an incentive in place, so don't just say to them, hey, local rowing association, I'd like to give you $1,000 for a sign. What you do is you say, hey, local rowing association, I'd like to get some exposure to your customers. However, what I need is exposure to your database. I need exposure on your race areas, and I need you to help me get that out there. And if you do, what I will do is I will give you a base level of sponsorship and an incentive payment every time I make a sale that's traceable back to the customer that you've delivered to. So it becomes open-ended, and you'd happily spend more money if you're making more money from a particular group. So, you know, that's a great way to get to them, or for that matter, through their school. You know, once again, these affluent schools, great way to reach them. However, you can take the non-affluent schools, because they've got kids too, and these people also spend money, provided, of course, your product is conducive to that group of people. As I always bang on and say, identify who the group of people is that you're trying to talk to, and then write a message to that group of people, and that will actually reveal to you the best way to communicate to those to that group of people. So if you're selling running shoes, for example, but not the sort that high-end athletes wear, but the sort that aspirational wannabes wear to look cool and funky, then the group of people who go to the non-high-end schools are probably a big group of people that will wear your product. So mm-hmm. how do you get your information in front of them? Well, you talk to their school, because just as the high-end schools have got rowing teams, you know, the middle schools and the lower socioeconomic schools, they've got needs as well, be that sporting, yeah, be that educational reward, be that, you know, any number of ways to incentivize. What they are looking for is the cash. What you're looking for is an avenue to get to them. So, yeah. You know,
simple things. My kids play in a local kids soccer team, football team for English football. And, you know, these places, they don't have much money, but, you know, you can sponsor the team strip. So it costs, I don't know, £20-25 to buy a football kit for kids from a sportswear company. And you're looking at 15 to 20 strips. So you're looking at like £400-600. It's not an absolutely huge amount of money. You might think, well, what's the point of sponsoring the kids' stuff? But, you know, those kids are parading every other week in front of 15 sets of parents in the local area with your message on. You're helping them, they're helping you in a way. And it's just a little bit different looking in a different area to get your message across to the right people. I had another super example last year. A friend of mine, he manages a superbike team. And they are very much the poor relation in the world of this particular... It's an international superbike competition that goes off around Europe. And, you know, they're expensive things to run, where a new set of front forks for a bike costs £3,000, or this piece of metal that, you know, sticks on the bike somewhere is £2,000 or £5,000 or whatever. And they're looking for sponsors. Now, these races, they are on television. You get some cracking sponsorship deals from some of the smaller teams, and as long as these teams are appearing in the top 15 or top 20 in the results, you know, fantastic. So you've got all the big names filling up the top five spaces maybe, but you're getting your image, your brand, your logo, your name, sponsorship right across the front of the bike, right across the TV, even when you're in 15th or 20th place, and it doesn't cost anywhere near as much. You know, you get fantastic value from that. And you think about the market of people that are watching this. They're affluent people that go all over the country. They're people that, you know, they'll go away for a long weekend based around the fact they're going to watch a bike meet. You might not think of bikers as your target market. The market of people that watch these things is enormously affluent. It's the same with a similar sort of run as Formula One people. And you get all kinds of organisations sponsoring Formula One races for exactly that reason. Yeah. You know, petrol heads is one thing, but corporate entertainment, people that follow it because they just have an interest in it. You know, you don't have to be a techie petrol head to really enjoy these races. And a lot of these people are a mixture, I guess, of petrol heads and affluent and non-petrol head, and, you know, whatever. You find a market, you find out where you can pitch things effectively, and you'd be surprised at some of the results that you're likely to get.
Yeah, the key to it is disposable income, you know, so it doesn't matter whether you've got bags of money or you've got hardly any, it's how much of the income are you willing to forego to do something, you know, and you can have no money at all and be passionate about, you know, your hobby and forego other things to be able to spend money on that hobby. So, you know, don't look at someone and go, oh, socioeconomic is probably not quite right for me. It's, will they spend that money? Will they forego something else to spend that money because they are passionate about what it is that you're selling? You said something that tweaked something in my brain too. We talk about buying radio and television and looking at the ratings results and saying, well, are there enough of the people that I'm trying to attract at that time to make it cost effective for me to buy that? But the same principle applies to wherever people are. I was standing in my local fish and chip shop the other day, and there's a notice board there. And anyone can pin anything on the notice board, and there were lots and lots of people who had just pinned their business card. Now, that's actually not very clever. The clever one was the person who had pinned up a piece of paper that identified the benefit that the person was looking after. So the problem and then the benefit of dealing with them. So it said, you know, if you're basically it said, if you're having this problem, I can solve it by doing this and their phone number. And I went, that's really clever. Because when you're standing at the local fish and chip shop for 10 minutes waiting for them to cook your fish and chips, you're standing there thinking, what can I look at? Anything just to keep my mind, you know, thinking about something rather than hearing the test pattern while I'm staring off into nothing and perhaps drooling a bit. So you read the notice board and there was somebody who had said, this is my product, this is your problem, this is how I solve it and fix that for you. And if you fell into that category, you'd be a mug not to call it. Because you were even standing there, the phone number was there. You pull your phone out and you go, and call the guy while you were waiting. It was very, very clever.
make it easy for people. I see exactly the same thing in all sorts of places. People have boards, some shops have boards, put your business card here. Well, the business card, sometimes, as you say, it's extremely limited as to what that business is about.
Well, some businesses you can't even tell what the people do from the name of the business.
No, absolutely. You know, it's a business card that you may have given somebody or is useful when you're actually meeting somebody and say, this is who I am, this is if you know want to contact me in future. But even then, a poor business card, when that person has filed it in his wallet and then emptied his wallet a couple of days later, put it in his other stack of business cards, and then like 2 months later, comes across it. Now, what on earth was that business about? You know, I can't remember. And you've got an ineffective business card. It's not doing anything for you there. You've gained a potential customer and lost a potential customer in the same breath, more or less. So, you know, have something that actually says what you do. And as David says, that's a super example. Don't just pin a business card somewhere, but provide somebody with a benefit, the reason why, and make it easy for them to contact you. Give them the phone number, give them the website address. Some people take it a stage further. You may have heard of QR codes, a little square of funny dots that appear in the corner or something. So some people with the right technology, the smartphone with the app on it that can scan that and take you straight to the right web page on your website, that a landing page that may be specific to them. You could come up with a page that's seen my advert on XYZ wall, you know, and introductory offer or da-da-da-da-da. So again, somewhere else, somewhere different. As you open your eyes as and when you're about and think, how could I use that? You know, that's a neat idea. What could I do something similar? All sorts of ways. And I'm going to throw another one in the mix here. They were popular a few years ago and they still push the comfort zone for some people. Breakfast meetings and business group meetings, called Chamber of Commerce meetings, platforms where you can get up and stand in front of people, like-minded businesses, people that are willing to listen to your business and promote their own at similar meetings. So maybe, you know, you go along every other week or every week on a Tuesday morning at 7:30, and there'll be small businesses, medium businesses there. You find out about services. You may listen to somebody else that morning and find out what they're all about. You might not have a need for it, but you may then, in the course of the next couple of months, stumble across somebody who has exactly that need for that business, and you refer them to it. But likewise, other people will be doing the same for you. So it might be uncomfortable for you to stand up in front of 15 other people and say, hi, my name's David, and we do this, 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 and this, and these are the benefits we provide, and da-di-da-di-da-di-da. Hopefully you do a better job than what I just did. but you get the idea. You'll be doing something to advance your business. You'll be exposing yourself to new markets. And something I heard a long time ago, which always resonates with me, do something new to advance your business every day. If you can expose yourself to new customers or new avenues or whatever, it's just going to snowball over time and will keep you growing instead of stagnating and kind of shriveling, I guess.
I've got another one for you. This is sort of real guerrilla marketing type stuff. And I know someone who did this. He was a mechanic. So when you go to the library, and you've got the manuals on how to fix different cars, he used to put a flyer into the books that said something along the lines of, you know, need help fixing your car? Call. And he's basically his logo and his number. And he just inserted in there on a piece of paper. You've got to be willing, of course, for the library to ring you up and go cranky at you. But at the end of the day, it was a really cool guerrilla marketing because that's where his customers were. These were people who were fixing their cars and getting into trouble. And he would bail them out. So, you know, that's looking for customers in, you know, the places where they actually were, as opposed to just running a radio ad and trying to mass market. Anybody who's taken the book out of a library who wants to, you know how to fix a 1968 Cortina is doing it for a reason. They've got a 1968 Cortina that's got a problem.
And probably a 1968 Cortina will have quite a few problems.
Yes.
Right. Anything else that we'd like to point our customers to our listeners to look for customers in the wrong place? Any other wrong places?
No, I think you've got to be you've just got to open your mind up to where are my customers actually? Not where did they used to be, where are they actually now? You know, and it's really a thought experiment. You've got to sit down and think about potentially where they are. What are they doing? Where does your business intersect with their lives in different places? And go to them there. You know, I talk to lots of builders on a regular basis at seminars, because builders are good customers for me, and I'm happy to share the information with them. The other week we were talking about, you know, putting out weekly emails of free information. Well, that's another spot that you can do it. You can promote those, you know, in different places, as we mentioned. That is looking for them in different places where they are, not just where you are. The days of just opening your door and hoping that they walk through, they're gone. And they're never coming back. So don't think, oh, well, I'll just wait it out. They're never coming.
I thought that was just going through my mind a couple of minutes ago, actually. You mentioned, you know, people look at websites, but they won't necessarily be looking at a website on a desktop. You know, 5 years ago, four years ago, 3 years ago, you know, you've got a website, great. You know, you're doing the right thing. You're getting out there in the places where people are looking for you. But realize that in the last couple of 3 years, we mentioned the iPhones and smartphones earlier, increasingly that is how people are interacting through the internet, looking at websites. Make sure that your website reflects that use. You know, have a mobile-friendly website where people can get that information in the form that's convenient to the way that they're looking at it. You know, nobody wants a massive website they have to pinch and scroll and expand and move their way around. Too much. If you've got two or three or five concise pages of information that gives them the information that they're going to be looking for about your business, make it easy for them to click a link or click a tab and call you from the smartphone. If that's what the way your business works, make it easy for them. No need to keep putting obstacles in the way.
I agree. As easy as you possibly can. You know, gather the information, gather the lead, you follow them up. Don't wait for them to find you. And now on my show, it's time to say goodbye, everybody. So anyway, that's been another fantastic episode. Lots of great information there on David versus David, the podcast. Don't forget, please go to iTunes, give us a five-star review. We love five-star reviews. Go to Facebook, like our page, leave us a comment, send us a question if you've got one. We'd love to be able to answer that question for you. And for that matter, you can always send us an email. We would love to answer a question via email. Until next week.
Goodbye, everybody, from me in the UK.
And I'm David Council here in Paradise, Australia, saying goodbye, world. Catch you next time.
You have just been listening to the David versus David podcast with David Pritchard and David Council, helping you get knockout results with your online marketing and advertising. Please keep in mind that the ideas, opinions, and information shared in the show are those of the hosts and do not reflect those of their past employers.